श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, श्री राधा माधव की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवत की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि So, good morning. So, welcome to all online present as well. And we are reaching almost at the end of our series on Brahma Stuti. Today we are in our penultimate class, second conclusion class, if you will. We'll have three of them finally today and one more tomorrow in the same time. So, today we have class 44 where we are continuing with through the remaining verses of the chapter, 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Today we will be studying a very interesting section of verses from verse 50 to verse 55, where somehow Sukadeva Goswami will give us a very interesting insight about how to really understand the love of the Vrajavasis. But let's first recap regarding what we saw yesterday, since one thing will be connected with the other. So yesterday we had our first conclusion class, if you will, where we studied verses 41 till 49. Immediately, what happened immediately after Brahma left. So after the 40 verses of prayers, the stuti of Brahma, Sukadeva Goswami continues speaking to Raj Parikshit, mentioned after this prayers, Brahma circumambulated Krishna three times, not four, in another Vimohan. He touched his feet and then he left. And then we explained some possibilities about what happened when he left. He went straight to Brahmalok, he met Mahaprabhu, in Navadu he has some darshan, and then he returned as Haridas Thakur immediately or maybe later. Some possibilities were there, but as we said, whatever the case, he attained. His post was not neglected as Brahma, and his ideal was not neglected as well. So after this happened, then Sukadeva Goswami described how Krishna resumed his picnic with his friends. He reappeared with bringing back the calves, just like one minute ago, as we mentioned. Yogamaya making the arrangement for the boys, feeling that it was just a minute. There was not 1 year of separation to tolerate or something like that. And when the boys see Krishna coming, they like, wow, they are surprised, like, wow, you returned so quickly. Now, that was such a fast, like a flash return. Now we thought it may take you like an hour or so, but it took you it took him a year, but they felt it was just a moment. So they invited Krishna, come on, Krishna, sit in the circle, in the Sakya Mandal circle of friends, and let's eat correctly now. No, Akanta Otsava, as we say. Let's inaugurate this festival up to the neck. No? And as we mentioned, Krishna still was with the same morsel than 1 year ago. All the preparations were there. Nothing was stale. Nothing created disgust, vivatsa. Everything was just like in a moment by Yogamaya's perfect orchestrating it, the whole situation. So after the picnic is there, Krishna returns with the boys and the calves back to Braj. And on the way, he points to them, oh, look, Hagasur. Create the impression. Remember, this happened a few minutes ago, and when we return now, let's sing about that. So it is described how Krishna entered Braj. He created another festival of his beauty, basically. His beauty in itself being a festival after the Akanta festival, Akanta Utsav. Yeah, it's raining. We may need to use this. Let's see. So they entered and the boys were performing kirtan, glorifying what just happened. No? Like today Krishna killed Agasur, and they start to like to narrate the whole episode. Like if it just happened. So everyone took it like that. Nobody thought it happened a year or something. Only Krishna knew that, Balaram. So basically those were the first verses where Sukadeva Goswami continue the narration, and then Parikshit Maharaj raises his hand and has a question to present in this connection, mostly not necessarily so much for himself, but for us or for some people in the audience. So he asked, but how is it possible that the mothers of Braj, these ladies who were the mothers who had Krishna as their son without knowing that for a whole year, how they could have more love for someone else's child than for their own children? How they could love their children, but actually we know it's Krishna. Parikshit knows that. So they were loving Krishna more than their children. No, Krishna's not their children. So he's presenting kind of the popular opinion, not like people will argue like that, or will like, how is it possible? How to explain that? And as we say, he also made that question because he knew there are some people in the audience who are engaged in tapasya and officially ascetics, but still they love their children more than Krishna. So let's strike them out. So he presented this question, basically. So this question, which is a very nice question, as we explained, will allow Sukadeva Goswami to present a very nice answer as well. A 7-verse answer. Today, we might not be able to go through the whole answer, but through the main part of it. And through this answer, Sukadeva Goswami will speak about the nature of relationships in this world, how love in this world, what's what actually one is loving in this world when one speaks about love, and beyond this world, and you ultimately converging in the love of Braj. Like a way of explaining more in detail how to properly, by contrast, by starting in this world and converging in Braj, to helping us to this through this contact to really further appreciate what's actually taking place in the heart of the Brajavasis. Sometimes we need to invoke contrast to further appreciate, to have a second point of reference to go back there with some updated appreciation of that. And he will also present this important point. Krishna is the ultimate object of all affection for everyone. So today, that will be today's topic, converging in this idea of the object of love, the ultimate object of love unanimously is Krishna. But he will begin by describing what do we in the world, how people think it's their object of love and so on. So fasten your seatbelt, it will be an intense presentation by Sukadeva Goswami. But this intensity is necessary to enter the Braj, to appreciate the love of Braj. So let's see how many of us survive at the end of the class. So let's begin with the first verse of this section, verse 50. So remember, the previous verse, verse 49, was Parikshit Maharaj's question. How to understand that someone can love Krishna more than their children? Which may sound like common sense. Of course, you can, but not necessarily common sense. We may have the answer, but another thing is how we feel, how we walk the talk. So Sri Sukadev Goswami, Sri Suka say, Sri Suka Uvacha, you will begin. And as usual, I will read the verse straight in English and not necessarily explain who commented what, but try to, for the sake of dynamics and time, go with the flow. So Sri Suka say, O King, for every created being, the dearmost thing is certainly his own self. The dearness of everything else, children, wealth, and so on, is due only to the dearness of the self. So now comes Sukadev unfolding. He will do it in a few verses. So as we will see, very interestingly, in the conclusion, Sukadev Goswami will reply to Parikshit questions, as you may imagine, is that Krishna is even dearer, more dear than one's own self and more dear than anyone, including one's Atma. Because Krishna is also known as Atma, but with capital A, the Atma of all Atmas. He will reach that conclusion in a few verses. But in order to signify that, again, Sukadeva Goswami is describing, first of all, the conditional love in this world. Again, we have to begin from some point of reference, and probably that point of reference, which is the main reference for most of the people. So he will speak about love in this world, conditional love connected to the body, then beyond the body, the self, the Atma, on top of that, the self of the self, the Paramatma or Krishna, if you will. So So again, to begin to speak about, it's interesting because, I mean, Parikshit Maharaj's question has to do with the Brajavasi's love. And Sukadeva Goswami immediately begins his reply by speaking about the love in this world, which resembles the love of the Brajavasis. It's a prakriti, it seems mundane, but there is such a huge gap between the two that in order to bridge the gap, he needs to go to the love of this world and gradually go higher and higher and higher and higher and converge in the love of the Brajavasis. So you make the full circle and realize, okay, there's a big difference between the two. So we have, again, he's a very intelligent speaker, and that's important also for any speaker. If you want to convey some point, you have to do it relatable in a way that people can somehow understand, and not just like say yes because they're afraid to say, I didn't understand. So sometimes you need to begin or compare, create contrast, whatever. Let's begin where we have our experience immediate now, this world, body, conditioned life, and from there we try to fly high over the rainbow, as Gurus will say. So here in this verse, again, the idea is for every being, their dearest thing is the self, their own self, not the children, not this, not that. So the point is, and if you love something else, it's only because you love the self first. So what's the meaning of the self? In Sanskrit, the word for self here is Atma. But Atma can mean many things. Atma can mean Krishna. Atma can mean the soul. Atma can mean mind. Atma can mean body. So the idea here with the self or with Atma means whatever you consider to be the self. You follow? Whatever you think you are, that. Whatever you repose your sense of I, that means the self here. One sense of I. Not every person will have the same idea. Although most, as we'll see, will begin with the body. So this section will be a lot into what Prabhupada will say, you're not this body. So here when this verse says the self, it mostly refers to the body. Because most of the people, when they hear about the self, they will relate that to the body. That will be clarified in two more verses. Sukadeva Goswami will make clear that till this level, when I am referring to the Atma, it has to do with the body. Because most of the people think I am the body. So their sense of I is one with their body. Follow my point? So just to understand how the Sanskrit works. You know, they use Atma, self. So what is referring to? Whatever you consider yourself.
Is that including the mind?
Yeah. Body will extend to gross and subtle. Yeah. Physical and psychic, yeah. And of course, after that comes these extensions of the body, as we hear, children, house, family, possession, dear ones. But all of them are dear, beloved, as the verse says, because the self is beloved, or whatever one considers the self is the main thing. So interesting how Sanskrit works, you know, because the same word is for body, for Atma, like in playing. Atma actually refers to what you are identified with. Where is your sense of I reposed? That's your Atma, in one sense. That's who you think you are. Body. Why the body is called Atma? Because you can identify with it to the point of thinking that's your actual Atma. And so many people will say there's no soul and I am the body. So, okay, Atma. That's who you think you are. So also in the Sanskrit here, it says Rajan, again like in other verses, O King. It can refer to different things, not only to astonishment. But also, Sukadeva will use this term many times in different verses to refer to Parikshit, which is an emperor, world emperor. So he's implying with this, whatever is dear to kings of your kind, such as protecting the citizens, not like a dharmic governor, all that is dear just because of the self. Again, whatever you consider dear, it's dear because it has some connection with who you think you are. Like you are investing your sense of I somewhere, and that somewhere becomes dear because yourself is dear. You follow my point? Mm-hmm. Whether you are aware of that or not, but the point is that how it works. So we may think we love someone, Of course, again, or we may think we love someone as the body, we will see that, we will think that, like this level of example is given. You may think you are the body, you love yourself, you love your body, other ones are the bodies, I love their body. Of course, we will see some situations in life will point to us, that's not the actual self. No? If the body, the person dies, the person you love dies, I mean, and you think that person was the body, if you have to sleep what night with that person, you start to get scared, probably. No. I say, but you love that person so much. Why don't you? Where are your feelings now? Because the Atma is not there anymore, of course. No, we know that, but for some people that's not... Sometimes this type of practical example can show, oh, was I actually loving? Is that the self? Where is the self? But again, in this level, it's mostly connected to the body. But the idea here, the point that Sukadeva Goswami wanted to make here is there is more love for oneself in turn. I mean, for the eye, because the eye the self is the focal point of the sense of I. Now, my sense of I focus on whatever, the body, whatever I consider. And that's the focal point more than my sons, my family, my. What follows my is of secondary importance than what follows I. You follow my point? No? So the mind are object of possessiveness. The mind is where I invested my I. So because I invested my sense of I in something, it becomes mine. And that's why it's important. But if my sense of I is not invested there, it's not relevant at all. I don't care at all. Guru Maharaj will say, I love my car because it's my car. Not because it is a car. I mean, so many cars are there, I don't care for them. But it's my. So the word my is important, but the word my is important because the word I is more important. Because I've entered through that by way of identification, attachment. So that created the my, and that created this sense of dearness, extended dearness to other objects and people. But it all begins with who I am or who I think I am. But it's all in my mind, this idea, no? Of my car, and I love my car. It's my car. I mean, the idea of my car is only... Because if someone else comes walking and sees your car, nobody knows it's your car. You're just assigning that relationship. It's my car. You are created that in your mind. It's not that everyone else knows, that's his car, because it's intrinsic. No, it's just a phantasmagoria in one's own mind. So the point is that people will love a person. Again, we are speaking on conditional level. We are not speaking about bhakti or anything. Let's go gradually. So people will love a person or a possession in this platform as long as they have a sense of belongingness to that. As long as that's present, there is some feeling invested in that direction. As long as their eye is invested there, I feel something for that. As long as my sense of I is not invested there, I don't care, literally. And we see that takes so many forms, like people sacrificing their whole lives going to a war because their sense of I is invested in this idea of nation, and being patriotic, you say, and so on, or family, or whatever thing one is identified with. Identify means my I was entering there first. But I go because of the sense of belongingness, you are willing to give your life for the sake of your country. No, for the sake of the self. You think it's for the sake of your country. You think it's for the sake of your family, but it's for the sake of yourself, who is invested there, and that's why they have some relevance in your life. You take the sense of I from there, you don't care for your country. You don't care for anything. So they only love the I. Although they seem they love the my family, my country. No, it's the I that allows the mind to have to exist. So that's how this whole hammameti works. I, me, mine. No, like that's samsara. Basically, we are here like analyzing the mechanics of samsara. Bhaktivinoda Thakur once defined what samsara. I, me, mine. He said hammameti. If there is no longer hammameti, there's no more samsara, more experience of samsara. A sense of self invested in a particular direction, creating a sense of mind, and just making the whole world go round, if you will, activating. So that's the first verse only. That's a prelude. But that will be the standard beginning, and he will try to unfold from that. So that's the first verse, where Sukadeva Goswami again is mentioning, for every created being, the dearmost thing is the self, whatever you think that is, whatever you are invested, your sense of I, and whatever else you love or you think you love, that's in because how much you love the sense of I, basically. And he will now unfold from that basic premise. So verse 51 now, next one. For this reason, O King of Kings, the embodied soul is self-centered. He is more attached to his own body or self, again, remember, they can serve as synonymous, than to his so-called possessions, like children, wealth, and home. So it's interesting, all this, because generally, externally, it seems, we say they are so attached to their house, they are so attached, we ourselves even use those terms. Someone becomes attached to their house, someone becomes attached to this, but actually, what's the real background attachment? It's not to those things. Primarily, that's, like I said, byproduct of the other type of attachment, if you want to put it. So, again, love for ourselves or for our sense of I is called, in this case, it's called nirupadika. In this case, nirupadika means something else than what we usually understand, that free from all designations. But nirupadika in this case means that it does not depend on anything else. While love for the family and so on depends on your love for your I first. You follow my point? But love for yourself, for your sense of I, is like immediate, spontaneous, natural, organic, automatic. So it does not depend on anything else. You don't need something else for you to have that love. If you want to call it love, we have to use some word. While the love for the mind, technically it's not nirupadika, but sopadika. Sopadika means, again, it depends on something else for that to happen. I cannot love my country if I not invested my I in the country. So it has to go through the filter of the I and become the my. You follow my point? It's the same way of saying the same thing. No? Even if someone, commits suicide, it may seem, they are not loving themselves, but actually they are doing that for the sake of themselves. No? Just they think there will be some relief there. Otherwise, why they are doing that? I mean, if they are doing that, that's for... Okay, they may not doing that. I'm doing that for the sake of myself, but intuitively, internally, that's taking place. No? They are trying to do whatever they do for the sake of their sense of I, whatever that is in that particular case. So again, the idea here is that the love of to like oneself is automatic, is natural. But to like others, the my, is conditional in that sense. No? It's contingent. It's contingent on it, on the first one. First, there is love for the self, for the sense of I, and then comes all the other expressions of that projected into the my, or mind. And again, Sukadeva Goswami here is calling Parikshit Maharaj not Rajan, but Rajendra, which means, O King of Kings. Again, pointing in the same direction, say, like, even O King, you're a king, you know what I'm talking about. You're a man, he's a great devotee, but also Parikshit is a man of great worldly experience, if you will. You cannot be an emperor in the world without having some experience. So he's basically making the point, King of Kings, even the love of an empire, for an empire, is not like the love of for the self. Like, many kings, not Parikshit, he left the kingdom like this, but most kings, they're not willing to leave their empire. As we spoke the other day. But it's not that they actually love the emperor, they love their self. And the emperor is their empire. So, but the implication with this is, you already know this, O King. No? Like, that's why you left that quickly and you are here now. No? So Parikshit doesn't fall in Dhritarashtra's category. So here we have basically this particular dynamics or dichotomy, the I-ness and the my-ness. No? The love for the self or the Atma, whatever one considers oneself, and the love for everything else that is related to what I invested myself to buy. So, interestingly, these two words, I, my, are probably the words, the two most used words in the whole human vocabulary. No? And probably the two less understood words of the human vocabulary. No? I, my, love, all these words that are the most used, generally, correspondingly, are the less understood. The more you deal with something, probably the less you understand that. So this is not the exception. So let's go to the next verse. So Sukadeva Goswami tried to bear in mind, he's building his case, his point, all this in the context of Parikshit's question. Don't lose sight of Parikshit's question, but we have to begin somewhere to build that case. He will converge in the glories of the love of the Brajavasis, but first you need to understand the love of this world, if you will, to really understand what's the ultimate real love. Let's go to verse 52. It says, indeed, for people who think the body is the self, O best of kings, persons and things related to the body are never as dear as the body itself. So here, finally, Sukadeva Goswami is clarifying that the word Atma that he had been using the previous two verses to the self actually has been mostly in connection to the body. Because he's speaking about conditional, mundane love, and most of the people can think of the self as their body, identify their sense of self with the body. So here he's calling them the Atma bodies. Deha Atma body. So Deha means body. And Atma means self. And body means like Maya body, full body, like who follows some particular way of thinking. So the Atma body. Those who think that their body is the self, the Atma bodies, they will consider their body as Priyatanam. Here is the word. Priyatanam is the dearest. Priya means dear. Priyatanam means like dear of dears. So he's referring this case. Now, even indeed, for those persons, there's nothing more dear for them than their own body. There may be things related to the body, again, people, objects, but that's secondary. Priority list is myself, my Atma, my body, in this case. So let's, interestingly, the word Deha, Deha Atma, we use here, Deha means body, one of the words for body, Deha. Again, Atma can mean the same, but Deha can mean body. Come from the Sanskrit root diha, and diha means to collect. Collect, which means the body is a collection of items. And generally, the way that it's explained is that you collect, for example, to make your body grow and survive, generally you eat and you collect food. So all the food being eaten, combined, collected, body starts to grow. It's a magical system. You know? You put some chapati here, and you have like 1 year coming. No. So some food becomes nose, some food becomes ears, eyes, some hands. It's magical, pretty magical. But that's the reality of the body. No? If we want to dissect the whole thing a little bit, they have inside. It's a collection of food taking different forms. We have to demystify a little bit all this situation, of course. No? So basically, that's the body. Now again, we are not speaking here sadhaka deha, all this bhakti consideration. Let's go to the base level. So it's basically, that's a collection of food items combined in certain ways. You know? But we try to make it attractive for others because we are, again, deha atma body. We think, that's me. So we try to do something with that lump of food, if you will. No? And we try to be attractive for other bodies. So it's one lump of food trying to attract another lump of food, basically. No? And you are laughing not in order not to cry, basically. No? Because that's the reality of the world. I mean, that's what most of the people is doing. Trying to to give certain shape to the lump of food so another lump of food becomes like, whoa, interesting. And that's when that happens, we think, oh, he loves me. But actually, one lump of food is being attracted to another. sorry if it sounds too sannyasi, but it's not because I'm sannyasi, it's just the facts. No? And that's what Shastra means by Maya, when Shastra speaks about Maya, Abhidya, Agyan, no, ignorance, illusion, means this type of things. No? Actually, this is happening, but you think this is happening, and you are just like romanticizing about, and it's just one lamp of food, magnet trying to be magnet with one another. It's just like skin disease. No? Because you can make the lamp of food nicely, but if I take just one layer of skin from world, Miss Universe, and you start to see all the muscles and bones, you start to run traumatized. So it's just one little layer of millimeter that makes the whole thing like, oh, you're so beautiful. Let me take the first layer here just now. And like, no? You know this story called the liquid beauty? Okay. Kishore knows that one? No need to go in detail there. No. But basically, that's the same principle. No? When the boy wants to see the beauty, the lady, you know, he took some purgant and vomit everything for a week. So he took him after a week. Where is your beauty? You know, here is me. No, you are not the princess. I know. I met him. Here is the beauty. And he showed all these jars with vomit and all these ingredients that scripture always repeats, described very interestingly, like blood, pus, and bilious.
Bile. We used to do plays of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
For the newcomers. Huh? And they went with the plate of prasad, just taking prasad. And they would do their own plate themselves. And like, So anyhow, there are ways of speaking about that, but one point is important to bear in mind, which are the facts on the biological level. So also the body, interestingly, sometimes it's not only called Deha, but it's also called Kaya, sometimes, Kaya. And Kaya comes from the root Kai, which means to cry in Sanskrit. So the idea is that the body is in many ways a source of trouble. Again, we are not speaking about bhakti and engage your senses for the pleasure of Bhagavan. We are speaking just as being identified with the body as the self. So we will end up crying, basically. Because of the attachment, of the trouble, sickness, old age, and still we don't want to leave it. It's giving me so much trouble, but I don't want to leave it. Due to, of course, my sense of I am disinvested there. Mm-hmm. So that's all I have. And we invest so much time, so much energy in the lamp of food, if you will. But it's giving lots of problems. But we continue dedicated to that. So much loyalty and chastity, dedication there. Generally, we don't take care like that of anyone else, basically, with our body. I mean, maybe a mother with just a newborn baby, the mother is there doing everything. But at one point, you won't be taking care of anyone, caring and bathing and feeding and changing and cleaning and any other person after a few days. It's like your mom gets old and you will send her to some retirement house. So someone else has to do that. I mean, all day long. So that's the point, no? But you do that to your body, so that's a sign of love, if you want to put it like that, how much we are invested in our sense of I, what we think we are, and we dedicate that, no? Again, I'm not speaking about prem when I'm saying love here. Please don't misunderstand, but that's a natural affinity, if you will, we feel from our sense of I. That's what we have. Our sense of I is fully invested in that particular direction. Although, again, Kai, you know, some crying will be there. The body sometimes is described in Indian tradition as full of holes, different holes. And holes sometimes are connected with imperfection or defects. You know, but still we love it. You know? It's full of imperfection, full of holes, but that's how we show love. You know? No matter their imperfection, I'm still dedicated to that. Okay, so that indirectly shows our potential if we put ourselves under the shelter of bhakti. You know? But that's how it's expressed in the conditioned state, if you will. So that's basically the condition of most people in the world. They are totally like identified, investing their sense of I in their bodies, and just are not willing to leave that, all despite the problems that may take. Now, there's a well-known story in the oral tradition in India, once Narad Muni was traveling across the earth, and he was seeing the condition of the people in the world suffering so much, attached to their bodies, the Atma bodies. The Atma bodies. So, and he was like so compassionate and feeling what can be done for them to be uplifted, to be in another condition. So he goes to Vaikuntha and offer pranam to Vishnu, and Vishnu said, Narada, how surprising to have you here. What takes you here? What is bringing you today here? See, I've come in just from earth, and I'm seeing so much suffering in the people on earth, and I'm feeling so much compassion. I'd like all of them to be liberated and come here to Vaikuntha and experience no anxiety. So Vishnu looks at him like, so what do you want me to do? Like, grant me the wish that whoever wants to come to Vaikuntha can come to Vaikuntha immediately. Is possible? Vishnu says, okay. Go to earth, and whoever you go, invite them, and whoever wants to come, doors are open. I'll let know Jaya and Bijaya about that. No? So he goes, no? And he goes and see everyone suffering but totally attached to everything, and Narada Muni starts to speak to them and to make his proposal, but nobody's interested. I said, but you have free ticket to Vaikuntha, you can come right now with me. You have, of course, you have to leave all the things, but Vaikuntha is waiting. No, no, thank you, I'll stay here. But you are suffering so much. I'm okay, I'll stay here. Have my, this, my, again, my sense of I invested here, my sense of I invested there. So nobody's paying attention. After 5 minutes, everyone is like, Jai Narada Muni ki jai. But one person starts like to hear a little bit more attentively. So Narada Muni says, okay, here I have my case, my bhakta. Here it starts to invest, and the person says, oh, sounds interesting, but do you know what, Narada? Let me first have one child. No, I don't have any child. I like to have that experience. I like to, again, invest my sense of I in that my, my child. So now I say, okay, I'll come next year. Yeah, 1 year. Yeah, okay. So now it returns, goes and returns after a year. So the person is there, the child is there. So, ready for Vaikuntha? Let him grow a little bit. Now let me go through his childhood years, his Kumar Lila, Poganda, Sankishore. Okay, how much? 5 years? 5 years. Okay, 5 years. So Narada Muni continues the journey and reserve 5 years. And I have to arrange his marriage ceremony before leaving. I cannot leave the whole family like this. I have to take things. Okay, 1 more year. Okay, let me see my grandchild. No, it's coming. It's on his way. And after that, we can go to Vaikuntha. So like this, no? Mm-hmm. Narada Muni come back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. He still has hope. He's returning. He's returning. Till the man is just totally old, and always has some reason for still one more day. And next time Narada Muni man was dead. So he goes and he finds his child, his grandchild, grandchildren. But the man, where is the man? No. Daddy passed away 3 months ago. Oh, Narada Muni said, oh. But he still was compassionate. No? He wanted him to go to Vaikuntha. By his mystic vision, he realizes, oh, he became a worm in the drain in the house here. So he goes to the drain and starts to speak to the worm in worm language. No? To say that great personalities have, Patanjali say, that capacity of speaking the language of different species. So he starts to speak to him and to remind the worm of his pact from the previous life. No? Somehow he remembers by Narada Muni's grace. And the worm says, like, yeah, Narada, I get the point. Thank you so much for reminding me, but what I will do in Vaikuntha? What will I do there? I'm here. I'm pretty happy here. No? There are many stories in Shastra like this. One scene, there also became a pig and they try for a curse, and everyone, Indra, it's time to return. Return where? I mean, I have my lady pig, my little piggies, I have all my excrement, everything is in place here. So now I was like, my God. And it said that he took the worm by force and sent him to Vaikuntha. At least he got one person inside there. Huh? Kripa Siddhi, he gave perfection. Go there, just. So, why are you... Nar Muni Ki Jai. So, but they, you understand the idea of the history, no? So like, even if, okay, why everyone, is, well, they want that. They want to remain in that situation. Even Vishnu say, all doors of Vaikuntha open, come here. And, no, I can stay here, thank you. This is my Vaikuntha on earth or something. Hmm. So remember, all this is to highlight the position of the Brajavasis, but by way of contrast, no? With those things that seem like Braj, which seem mundane, which seem from this world, which seem attached, but as we know, Vrindavan is a Prakrita. Seems Prakrita, but it's totally transcendental. So, so since we are speaking in terms of the body, I mean, if you analyze the situation of the Brajavasis, it will be more akin to the, like to the cells of the body. Sometimes that's the description is given. Like the, all the cells are cooperating together for the survival of the body, for the interest of the center, if you will. Even they are willing to die. So the main system is preserved, if you will. No? So this is actual bhakti. No? This is the real thing that we are after. No? Not only, as some, sometimes it say, no, bhakti is not only a noun, but it's a verb. Mm-hmm. It's not just like devotion, but it's something practical. No? That you have to practical, you have to express in practice. Especially braja bhakti. No? The word braja, apart from referring to Vrindavan, means it's a verb. Means to go. When Krishna says to Arjuna, sarva dharmam parityaja mamikam sharanam braja. Braja there technically means to go. Like when he says, come to me, come exclusive. So braja bhakti can say, no, bhakti is a noun, it's not a verb. No need to make that active. We are speaking, we are after braja bhakti, and braja means to go. So the implication in braja, the word braja is, you have to enter into this spirit, basically. You have to do something here, in the here and now, to get there. It's not just, I just me, mediocre, or not do anything, and somehow at the end of my life, some mystical, I don't know, spaceship will come and take me to Golok or Vaikuntha. No, if you are not there here, you won't get there. That's how it works. It's not just expecting some mystical transformation without doing the homework, no? But at the end of my life, as we spoke sometimes, just by dying in Vrindavan, I go there. No, before you die in Vrindavan, you have to live in Vrindavan. And that's the state of consciousness. You will get into Vrindavan by living in Vrindavan, not by dying in Vrindavan. If you die in Vrindavan while living in Vrindavan, and this is not a physical act, that's another thing. So to live in Vrindavan means to live in Braja Bhakti, to understand this is an active verb, an active thing. It's not just, okay, I do my nonsense, but I get my ticket, I'm dying, leaving my... So again, my point is all the things that these preliminary explanations are including, implying is that if you want to reach the highest conclusion of this section, first you have to properly deal with all these inferior, if you will, issues. So this type of verses represent some form of like clarion call, if you will. For us to awaken, maybe not for Gaudiya, or probably also, they still may need, to awaken to the real nature of love in this world. Because that's one of the most, I mean, it's the most misunderstood thing, and it's the most hankered thing. You know? People hanker after love, and that's the greatest misreading of most of the people. What's love? Where is love? Who I am? Mm-hmm. And of course, it's a hard pill to swallow. No, if I go to any person with this type of philosophy, it's like they make the whole structure collapse. No, the whole life is like threatened. Once they will feel like that, but it's crucial to go through it. It's real. It's reality. We are not just like being fanatical or too renunciant or something. No, so it's important. I mean, if you want to understand the real nature of real love in the real world, you have to understand the false nature of false love in the temporary world. Many times that's part of the equation. It's not just like by reading about the Brajavasis, you got it. Sometimes you need to hear the things to, oh, now I can understand that what the Brajavasis show is different. Mm-hmm. So again, in this world, we will find different levels of false identifications of the self, and therefore different levels of love are seen according to our degree of expression of false ego. I remember when I read first time this book by Eric Fromm, The Art of Loving, that was kind of something like that, because the book is about love and what's love and how love is an art. But before he reaches the point of the highest possible conception of love he had, he begins a long chapter with what love is not. And that's terrible. I mean, that's brutal for most of the people. I mean, he's doing that, presenting it nicely, but for most of the people, that's what love is. And that first chapter is just, this is not love, this is not love because of this, because of that, this is not love. So if you survive the first chapter, you can read the whole book. But I will make some study how many people just died in the first chapter or left the whole reading there, because my point is it's necessary step before I speak about what love is. Probably I have to deconstruct your false notions of that, as we know, no? Before, because again, we already may have our ideas, like the famous example of the music teacher that I charge you more because you think you know how to play whatever, mridanga, but you learn by yourself for 10 years and you have a total messed up. What does it actually mean? So first I need to take you back, take you to zero, to scratch. Now you are in red numbers, minus 108. I have to take you to zero and then we can begin. So sometimes these deconstructive sections are crucial to properly build the foundation of Vrajabhakti, proper understanding of what Vrajabhakti is. So, but again, even in the case of those people without any vivek, any discrimination whatsoever, who think, I am the body and live like that, still, for them, the self is the most dear. Because they are investing their sense of self in the body. Oh, there's something else apart from the body, who is the self. For them, that doesn't exist, so they invest their sense of self there. So they consider the body is the self, and that's the dearest. So the conclusion of Sukadeva Goswami remains. The self is the dearest thing for everyone. The self, whatever it is for anyone, for everyone. So in this way, Sukadeva Goswami is continuing to show, whatever it may be the case, whether you are totally attached to your body or some levels, the self is the focal point of love in this world. Nothing else. In this world, again, still we are not speaking about God. In this world, the focal, only exclusive, unique focal point is the self. Whatever anyone thinks about what's the self. So in the next verse, Sukadeva Goswami will invoke a slightly higher level of realization between the Atmabadi and something more. So he says, verse 53, if a person comes to the stage of considering the body mine instead of me, he will certainly not consider the body as dear as his own self, because even when the body grows old, the desire to live remains very strong. So this is the next verse, where we go a little bit, some progress here, no? From I am the body to this is my body. It's a little bit, we are getting closer, gradually closer and closer to the Brajavasi standard. Still we are quite far. But all these, again, these chapters are necessary to fully appreciate their aprakritva, their aprakritness, no? Which seems mundane, but it's another thing altogether. So he's saying, some people will think, I am the body, some people think this is my body. But in that case, if you think this is my body, I'm something else. This I am something else, of course, is more dear than the body, because now the sense of self is invested in somewhere else. Whatever this that somewhere else is, that will be the most dear. Even when the body is no longer accompanying, again, the sense of self-preservation remains. That's why Sukadeva Goswami says, even when you get old, this desire to live remains very strong, because you are invested in that direction. And that's interesting, because again, it doesn't mean that this person is fully enlightened. If you say, this is my body, I'm not the body, but still many of these people, knowing that or not, they like to expand their sense of self by having things, for example. There are many, I mean, not necessarily you need to be an eccentric collectionist of many things. Many of us may need to have some things around us. Because those things, that sense of mine, makes my sense of I stronger. At least I have my house, at least I have my car, my whatever, my teddy bear. You feel with whatever is the what makes you your sense of I feel stronger in the conditioned state. So people have things around themselves that they think they own. They are mine. So because these things are mine, I'm something. I'm someone else. So even unconsciously, they are trying to nourish their sense of I through this mine. So the drift of this verse is basically that even when it is determined that the body will not be alive forever, the body is temporary. Even in that case, when you understand, okay, I'm not the body, it makes sense to still, the idea is the focal point of love relates to the self only. Even when the body is no longer there, still the focal point is, okay, now the sense of self is not to the body, the sense of self is to the self. Still we are speaking about this, the same principle is the same. Whatever you consider the self, whatever you invest your sense of self, that's the only object of love in this world. There's nothing else. And of course, on top of this slightly higher example, if some dehatma body, some person who thinks they are their body, acquires some discrimination, becomes somehow more enlightened, can we have this in case? And their sense of self takes precedence, if you will. There will be some people who won't care if they live or die. No, they will reach some point where they understand the difference between body and self, and they won't be attached to living their body, if you will. And we have people investing lots of energy and time in that, like yogis or tapaswis who really do extreme tapasya. No, tapasya Prabhupada will describe as voluntary acceptance of material difficulties for the sake of the self, wills basically. Externally, it may seem like, why you are doing that? Why the fasting? Why the lying on the bed of nails or whatever? But they will say it's for the sake, it's not for the sake of the body, for sure. But it's for the sake of the self. But again, still the self takes precedence. That's the principle over and over and over again. There's one verse in the Mahabharata which gives an interesting sense of how this gradation occurs in the world from a smaller sense of identification to a bigger picture. The verse says that one may give up a family member to save a family. And one may abandon a family for the sake of the village. One can renounce a village for the sake of a nation. But one must be prepared to sacrifice the entire earth for the sake of the self. So Mahabharata gives this kind of notion. So at the end, some person will, of course, in all these examples, the sense of this of self will be invested. No, my family, my village, my nation. That's why I'm willing to sacrifice one thing for the other, because I identify with that bigger picture, and bigger picture, and bigger picture. Until now, again, we have not reached the ultimate conclusion. Above body, family, nation, village, country, planet, earth, is the self. So again, the conclusion is that whatever is the referent of the word I, whatever it may be for me at present, that is the topmost object of love. Whatever is the referent for the word I, for me at present. And whatever is the referent for the word my, that will take a second place. Always. Because that my cannot exist independently of the I. You take the I away, there's no more my. It's clear? In theory, at least. Let's go to verse 54. We have two, this and one more verse. Bear with me. So, bear with Sukadeva. Verse 54 says, Therefore, the dearest thing to anyone is oneself. This entire universe, consisting of mobile beings and immobile beings, is dear only because the self is dear. So again, he's pounding the post from different places but making this point. So interestingly, Sukadeva Goswami said the dearest thing to anyone is the self. Anyone. Which implies the universality of this rule on earth. Again, we are speaking in material consciousness terms. That's there's consensus in that direction here and that, about
and
that.
Also includes animals and insects and all.
Yeah,
all
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's say here, no? This entire universe consisting of mobile, immobile beings. Mm-hmm. Whatever I found dear in the whole spectrum, universal spectrum, I will find that dear only because the self is dear. Not, there's no other explanation, basically. And again, as we say, how you can prove this point? Well, when the soul leaves the body, again, the body that was dear, nobody wants to see that body anymore. Try to burn it as quick as possible. The point is, only the self was actually dear. Despite you may know, have known that or not, but only the self is lovable, if you will, not the objects. No? And this verse uses the word taracharam. Taracharam means mobile, immobile beings. No? So with this, the commentators say this word indicates moving living entities, such as animals, that may be dear, or non-moving living entities like a plant or like a tree, which may be dear, or this word may refer to moving possessions, like a whatever, like a car, or non-moving possessions like a house, like a cell phone nowadays. We have to update the tikka, the commentary here. So whatever the case, moving and moving people, possessions that may be dear, all of those are dear only because one sense of I, the self, has been invested in that particular direction. Period. That's Sukadeva Goswami's point. You name it. I love that. And that's why. That's why. Which, of course, again, it's like kind of strong news for many people who think, I love that purple, and ooh. You are telling me that I don't love anyone and nobody loves me? That may be the implication. Of course, we will explain that more. But yeah, basically that's it. Of course, you have to be expert to convey those news. But to the point is, Sukadeva Goswami again is trying to make some points before reaching the ultimate conclusion in relation to the question of Parikshit. That, remember, is how the mother can love someone else's child more than their own child. So try to connect all that Sukadeva Goswami is trying to make. Even if you love your child, you are not loving more your child, you are loving yourself. So here it didn't reach yet the high point, Krishna. He's just speaking about oneself and everyone else here, one's child, whatever. And then it will be natural to conclude what to speak of Krishna. So here establishing the self is dearer than anything else. So then he will conclude, of course, Krishna is dearer even than the self. But till this point where we are here, the conclusion is everything, anything is dear only because for the sake of the self. That's one layer of truth. But again, all this has been exposed by Sukadeva Goswami in terms of common dealings in this world. So one has more love for the self than for anything else, even for one's child. Now the example of the child has been used repeatedly here. Okay, so it's raining a little bit here, so we will use the microphone now. So repeatedly, Sukadeva Goswami is resorting to the example of the children because the question of Parikshit Maharaj is about children. No? How they could love someone else's children more than their own children. And Sukadeva is here dissecting the whole thing, saying, what to speak of children? One loves oneself more than one's children. So, of course, that may create. So, if one loves oneself more than one's children, and they love Krishna more than their children, that means that the Chief Krishna is more loving than one's own self. Of course, that's the conclusion. Indirectly, he's taking us in that direction in a natural way. So for us, it's like, oh, obvious, naturally. Okay, if it's totally clear that I'm loving myself more than even my child, if the gopis are loving Krishna more than their children, means that Krishna is more loving than myself. And yeah, that's the idea, and that's Vrindavan. But we have not reached yet there. So, as someone may say, well, but is there a way of proving this practically? It makes sense in theory, but can we resort to some sort of practical experiment that we can try at home to understand how actually nobody loves me as they say in this world? I don't love anyone and I think I love them in this world. Again, this doesn't mean I cannot love anyone, nobody can love me, but there's a way to do that, for that to happen. So there is another story in this connection that we can use as an example, and that can be also a practical experiment. You can try it at home. It may have some consequences, but... There was a story, once there was a sadhu visiting a village in India, and he was like hearing Harikatha, and the people was hearing. At one point he was explaining this same section of the Bhagavatam to the villagers, which again, it may not be an easy pill to swallow, so he was trying to make it as swallowable as possible without, of course, distorting the teaching. And everyone was hearing and following, but one boy was there, 20-year-old boy or something, and said, "But Maharaji, I understand your point, but I mean, from direct experience, I really feel how my family loved me, my mother, my father, my wife, everyone in my village, and I love them. So why you are telling this that actually nobody's loving one another, but they're loving their own selves through others, basically. So it doesn't, although your theory hints at something, it's not making full sense to me. So I need some more practical demonstration of this." So the sadhu say, "Okay, let's do some practical demonstration of this." So the sadhu will teach this boy, "Okay, tomorrow when you are at home and you are eating with your family, you simulate like you are having a very strong pain in your stomach and like you are about to die. And you start like to twist and turn on the floor, and at one point you like faint like if you were dead. But before that, you go to the doctor in the village, give him 10 rupees, which at that time was a lot, and tell him that when your family goes to find him to see what's going on with you, you tell your family, he's dead. And then that the doctor has to tell, I don't know what to do, but there's one sadhu in the village that he may know something else. You do that." And the boy was like, "What? Okay." But he tried. No? So the next day he was there, they were having prasad, he started going, "Ooh." So he fell to the ground, started to roll and to cry, and he collapsed. Like death. So all the family started to cry and they called the doctor, and the doctor came. He didn't have a problem, 10 rupees was a lot. So, and he examined him, he touched different parts, he tried to revive him one way or another. So he told the family, "He's dead. Dead." So everyone starts to cry terribly. Terribly. And what to do? What to do? And the doctor said, "Well, is there any sadhu in this area? Because maybe he may know some mystical formula to revive him that I don't know. I'm just a doctor." And they say, "Oh yes, there's one sadhu in the area with the priest in our local temple, which was this sadhu. Okay, so bring him." So all the family goes and brings the sadhu back, and the sadhu comes and sees the boy doing nicely the character, playing the performance. He was lying on the floor with some foam coming from his mouth. So everyone is crying, like, "Please, Sadhuji, do something so our child can come back to life. He's so young. We love him so much." Okay, he started to examine him and try different ways and say, it's not working. But there's one thing that may work, and I know how to do that. And he said, I can bring him back to life, but only if someone is willing to change their life or his. There is possibility. There's a way to do that, he's saying. So if someone is willing to sacrifice their own life so he can be back to life, that person will be dead, but he will be back to life. So he starts to ask the mother, are you willing to, the wife of the child, are you willing to do so? Say, I'm pregnant, I have to bear my child very soon. So he starts to go from one family member to another, and everyone has some excuse not to give their life for their for his life. Mm-hmm. So you may imagine which is the direction of the story. This already shown of myself first. Now then my kid, my husband, but first myself. Mm-hmm. And then the sadhu ends all the possibilities and realizes nobody's willing to give their life for him. So the sadhu tells them, well, I can do that myself, he said. The sadhu say, I'm willing to give my life. And the friend from every family member say, yeah, I think that's a good idea. You are renunciant, you don't have family members, so there's no problem. You don't need, so you can do it, no problem. Thank you. So he kind of goes, and of course the boy is listening all this meanwhile and receiving the reply to his question. So the sadhu like touch the boy, and the boy comes back to life, and everyone in the family is like, wow. So the sadhu then says, okay, I have given you my life. In the way also referring, I give you this knowledge that is life. So now you give me your life. He tells to the kid, in the sense of, you come to me now. And the boy said, yes. I'm leaving all my so-called loved ones and lovers, and I'm going with the sadhu. Sadhus are our real lovers, actually. They know us and they love us more than what we know and we love ourselves. So that's kind of the teaching of the story. But you can try that experiment at home, just in case you have some further doubts. To see what's the reply there. So anyhow, let's go to the next verse, the last verse of today's presentation, verse 55, which is kind of the conclusion, although there will be a few more verses after this, but this kind of a high point in connection to this idea. Now we mentioned how the sadhu is loving us more because the sadhu is teaching us by precept and by example. Not only the sadhu will teach us all the things that were taught till now by Sukadeva Goswami, the nature of love in this world, and all the things that we shared, but also the sadhu will specially teach us what? That even there's a higher source or object of affection than one's own self, and that will be the self of all selves. And in one sense we will see this verse that comes now, in one sense it could be considered also like the acme of the whole chapter, high point. Because all this is in connection to the Brahma Vimohan Lila and the Brahma Stuti, is all in that context, and it's a high point that will of course converge in the figure of Krishna as the perfect object of love and the self, at the Atma of the Atma. So let's go to the verse 55. So after saying all that Sukadeva Goswami said to build his case till now in reply to Parikshit Maharaj's question, he says, you should know that Krishna is the soul of all souls. Until now he has been speaking about the self, the soul, the Atma, but now he is referring to Krishna as the Atma of all Atmas. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his internal potency. So this verse 55, where Sukadeva Goswami kind of reaches the zenith of his presentation. Okay, the self as the body, the self of the self, the self of all selves. Mm-hmm. So after the preliminary previous explanation, the previous verses were just like preparing the stage, setting the stage for the real answer, the real thing. Now comes the actual answer of Parikshit to of Sukadev to Parikshit's question, like why the mothers are loving Krishna more than their children. And now he's saying, yeah. He's saying, you should know, you, Sumati, that Krishna is the soul of all souls. So, of course, that's in connection to everything else. Speaking about the soul, the self, the Atma. He is the soul of all souls. And then he elaborates upon that. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. And he has done this by the strength of his internal potency. Not like a few points regarding Krishna's avatar, descent, not as mundane. It seems ordinary, but that ordinariness is only for the benefit of those on earth as well, so they can relate with him, to interact with the Brajavasis. All this happening through the Swarup Shakti. So again, everything that we have gone through till now is just like the preface. And now comes the real answer. Why these mothers love the child more, Krishna more than their children? Because he is the soul of all souls. They are the self of all self. The self is more dear to anyone's children, and Krishna is more dear than anyone's self. He's Paramatma, if you will. We have Atma as the body, Atma as the self, Paramatma. He's the controller of all the souls, so in that sense he's the soul of all souls. And of course, on top of Paramatma, literally, we have Bhagavan Swayam, Bhagavan Sri Krishna in Braj. So Krishna, he appears like an ordinary human being, but he's a source of Paramatma. But again, this is not an easy point to make. That's why Sukadev Goswami is going through all these other layers of explanation. So in this way, we have gone through the Atma in the beginning as body. People understanding the self as body, investing their sense of I there. Then those who separate my body and myself. So from Atma as the body, we go to Atma as a soul, as the self, actual self, and then to Atma here as Paramatma, or as the Atma of all Atmas. That's the name of God as well, Atma. So Paramatma is Atma with capital A, and Krishna is Atma with capital A-T-M-A, if you will. Because Paramatma is still an invisible principle in everyone's heart, but we could say what the ultimate personified form of Paramatma is Krishna. And that's where the Brajavasis are reposing their love. The perfect object of all affection. So, Raja Krishna. That's how Sukadeva Goswami is reaching his final point in his reply. And there are different verses in Shastra saying the similar thing. There's interestingly in the third chapter of the Bhagavatam, ninth chapter, verse 42, Krishna is saying that to Brahma at the beginning of creation. Interesting, because this is connected to Brahma's prayer. So Krishna is saying in that verse to Brahma, O creator of the world, I am the self of every self and the dearest of all that is beloved. Therefore, love is meant for me, on account of whom the body and everything else are dear. This whole section is summarized in the same verse, 3942. And there are many other verses in Shastra like this. When Uddhava is praying before leaving Vrindavan, he says, Tam parantanu brituku vigupavadu gubinda eva nikila atmani rudhavavu. Nikila atmani means he's the Atma of all Atmas. So the same principle here. So in a very expert way, Sukadeva Goswami is taking us to converge in a natural, the most natural way as possible in this principle. Krishna is the perfect object of love, and that's how the love of the Brajavasi mother is totally justified. It's not a weird thing, but it's actually the other thing is a weird thing. Although it's the most common understanding for people, if you properly play out and understand that, you will understand. To love Krishna more than anyone else is a natural thing, and to love everyone else above Krishna is weird. But we are weird and we don't understand that. So Sukadeva Goswami is trying to express that one way or another. Now, some, as we say, sound in the same way that our affection for our attachment, I would say, for children or house or whatever, is based on our attachment to our physical body, identifying the body as the self. And in the same way as the attachment to the body is a result of the Atma's present in it. I mean, you are attached to your family because your body is present there, in them. You are attached to your body because your Atma is present there. But you are attached to your Atma because Paramatma is present there. And of course, when you properly address Paramatma through Bhakti, that Paramatma becomes Krishna. Mm. So that's what is lovable. That's what you love those things, because you are present there. You insert yourself there, you know, in all this sequence. So in this way, this in the same way as we already went through that sequence, our attachment to the self as the apparent most lovable object in the whole world, if you go a step further, is because Paramatma is there. It's immanent within it. Not independently. The self does not exist independent. The self is not its own source, if you will. So in one sense, Paramatma is the real object, the ultimate object of priti or love. And again, Krishna is the source of Paramatma. Now Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Ekam sena stito jagat. He says, but one portion of me I sustain all these worlds. And that one portion is Paramatma. See, Paramatma is one portion, one fragment of me. That's the very idea of Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. God comes from me. God is an aspect of me, Krishna is saying. Paramatma is God, basically. That's the idea most people have of God, is G-O-D, as we say the other day. That has more to do with Paramatma and cosmic administration. So all these gods are coming from Krishna in the Brahma Vimohan Lila just recently. So Krishna is the very source of Paramatma. And when the devotee is properly situated, as Guru Maharaj will say, Paramatma will be gently kicked out or replaced, let's say, and Krishna will be enthroned in the heart as the one's ultimate istadev. Krishna, Bhagavan says that in the Bhagavatam, Sadaburi Dayam Mayam. Sadhanam hridayam tuham madanyatina janantinaham tibhyamanam. Sadhana, I am the heart of my devotees and they are in my heart. I am their heart, they are my heart. And that's not Paramatma speaking, that's Bhagavan speaking. So, we have gone a long way, but it's from the Atma body, I am my body, to Rajavasis. Now, it's a long journey from one point. There are two extremes in one sense. So that's why Sukadeva Goswami is trying. And the fact that this verse describes Krishna as the the Atma of all Atmas, in one way also it's kind of speaking about the very meaning of the word Krishna. Of course, there are many meanings to the word Krishna, but generally, sometimes the two parts of the name Krishna are connected with Krish, no? In one sense, means existence, and Na has to do with happiness. Again, there are many other interpretations, but one of the main ones has to do... So everyone wants to exist. Survival instinct. And everyone wants to be happy. And Krishna is the very source of both. He's Krishna. Krishna. He's the very source of these most intimate, like natural instincts that every one of us has. So everyone, even if someone is an atheist and say, I don't believe in God, but you say, but you believe in existence, you believe in happiness. Yes, so you believe in God, because that's where you will find that. There's nowhere else. No? So without him, without Krishna, no, you don't have existence nor happiness. So Krishna is the very form of that. He's Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Sat means existence, Chit means consciousness, Ananda means happiness, Vigraha means the form of all that, condensed personification of that. And we are all looking for that. So that's why he's all attractive, we could say. Krishna is all attractive because all that we are looking, existence, happiness, he's a form of that. So we cannot but go in that direction. So he's the point, he's the ultimate object of affection. He's the ultimate perfect object of love. So from Tattva Drishti, or from the perspective of truth, from the proper viewpoint, even the love for oneself from the Atma is something relative. Again, it's not an absolute principle. It's not that only love for the country is relative to your sense of I, or love for the body is relative to yourself, but love for the self is relative to the super self. Because it's not independent. We are not independent. So it's not, we are not how do you say it? What's the expression that Hegel used, that Srila Semaraj used? For itself and by itself. That's the definition of God. He's for itself and by itself. We don't fit into that category. So we have a source. No? Krishna says in Gita, Mama Ibamsa Jivaloki Jivabhuta Sanatana Anasa Stanand Indriyai Prakriti Stani Karshuti. Mama Ibamsa Jivaloki, the Jivas are part of my, one part of me, one part of my energy. And that's where I am their source. So there, to love of the self is still a relative principle. It's not the absolute principle. Absolute principle is love for the Atma with capital A. Not for the small Atma that we are. No? Our small Atma is to be linked with the big one, with A. Paramatma. Paramatma is also like a big one. With capital A. No? And that's why also some... It's interesting how also again the Sanskrit words, but in the Gita... When Krishna refers to his devotee, he uses the term Mahatma, which means great soul. If you don't live, and then Mahatma is a devotee, he doesn't use the word Mahatma for anyone else. So a devotee is he who links his small A Atma with the big A Atma, and only then once small A Atma can be called Mahatma. Now your Atma is big because you took shelter in the actual Atma with all capital letters. If not, you are not Mahatma. That's called, you will be called Duratma. Duratma means contracted soul, not big, expanded. Of course, it's not big in, or small in physical size, but expansion of consciousness, of contraction of it. So the absolute principle is to love the Atma with capital letters, to love Paramatma Bhagavan. We love the self. In other words, if we love the self, as most people do, without including God in the equation and without knowing that the self is there, the only object of love, only we love the self because the self is part of Paramatma. You cannot see the self alienated from its source, so that it all converges back into the source of all sources. And since Paramatma is that the ultimate source, only unconditional love is only possible with him. You follow? Because he's the ultimate source of all so-called loves, it all converges with him in the real way. So he's the only object possible for unconditional love, for pure love. If you take him out of the picture, you only have conditional love. Because all other forms of love are dependent on this principle, the Atma with capital letter at the end. If you take out the Atma capital letter, the other things have no foundation. They are not foundations of themselves, in themselves. So Krishna is the ultimate foundation of love, whether we know it or not. All other forms of love, my country, my body, my family, it all depends. Myself, no, go further. Ego bahya, agya kaha ar, like Mahaprabhu will tell Ramananda. That's superficial, go deeper. And it all converges in God, if you will. So real love starts with love for God, technically speaking. That's why we say, some people will say, in order to love, to serve God or serve humanity. But we'll say, in order to serve humanity, serve God. In the sense, first go, I mean, with no problem with helping, serving humanity, but that's going to the root of all that. That's why the Bhagavatam compares bhakti to watering the root of the plant or feeding yourself through the mouth. Go to the root and everyone else will receive their part. All the other layers, no? Like self, body, family, nation, village, it all has as its foundation the Paramatma or the great Atma. So again, real love for others starts with love of God, because if not, this not possible. And again, and this idea of love of God, it converges ultimately, ideally, where?
Vrindavan.
So that's why Sukadeva Goswami is taking gradually all of us on this journey. In his reply to Parikshit Maharaj's question. And in Vrindavan we find this idea. The happiness of the inhabitants there, it's only fully depending on the happiness of Krishna's happiness, on the happiness of Krishna. That's their way of identifying themselves. Who they are is totally centered on them. but not as a codependence dysfunctionality, because that's also the point. You may analyze the Brajavasis and think, they are codependent. They need to serve that person, so they feel they are somebody. But it's not that codependence means it seems that I'm giving myself to you, but actually I'm using you to define who I am, to confirm me, my lackings. And I'm actually not serving you, actually. I'm exploiting you. Although it takes the form of serving you, I'm just using you because I'm not able to know who I am, to define myself, and I need... But that's codependence. But the Brajavasis are not having that psychological lacking at all. They have love for Krishna. So in this way, Krishna is the highest object of love. This is the conclusion that Sukadeva Goswami is reaching here. It's not the self, it's not the body, it's not the mind, it's not the I, even our sense of I. So if Krishna is the highest object of the highest love, the conclusion, of course, is the greatest love can be felt only in relation to Him. He is the perfect object of the most perfect love. Not for even for one's children. Again, remember the question of Parikshit Maharaj. You know, how the gopis can love Krishna more than their children? Sukadeva Goswami said, this is how. This is why. This is Krishna. That's why the Brajavasi love Krishna more than their own children. Because He is the perfect object of love. So in this way, this is how Sukadeva Goswami replied to the question of Parikshit Maharaj, explaining love for Krishna is greater than love for one's own self. What to speak of one's children? What to speak of anything? No? So that's the way he didn't just give the reply immediately, like, of course, Brajavasi, because we may not understand all the implications of his reply inside that. So he needed to go through all these other layers, starting from this world and gradually getting there, no? But of course, without the bhakti that we see in the Brajavasis, or without any form of bhakti whatsoever, of course, going back to the beginning, just to create one last contrast and reminding, without bhakti, of course, people will think that the proper object of love will be, regard this question, their children. And again, we are not demonizing that people, it's just how it operates while why it's not aware of Krishna, basically. So the children, even if Krishna appears in the picture, God appears in the picture, first my child. So if you think like that, it means you have not fully understood what's Krishna, what's God. If God is not on top one of your list, it means you don't have a clear picture of all that God can be in your life. So if someone is loving their children more than God, more than Krishna, instead, they are loving Krishna indirectly, if you will. No? They are loving Him as He's manifested through them, through the potency of Maya Shakti, if you want to put it. Because Krishna is the foundation of all reality and all loving expression. But they are not acknowledging that properly and going that in the most comprehensive way, but just filter by filter and filter by so many layers. But the Brajavasis, who have a true perception of who Krishna is, they are loving Krishna directly, not indirectly, and not through the filter of Maya Shakti, but through the filter of Swarup Shakti. And of course, they are totally beyond Maya. They have the highest form of bhakti, so it's natural for them. That's the point. That's the point that Sukadeva was to point here. It's natural for the Rajavas to love Krishna more than their son. They are not even like thinking about that. It's swabhavika for them. It's like their nature. They are ragatmika, remember, they are made of love for Krishna. So, I mean, it cannot be something else. They have no second option. No? So this is how Sukadeva Goswami has like harmonized, if you will, or replied to Parikshit's question. Good reply. It was a good question, a good reply. So just to conclude, just one more point and we put the discussion to rest. So the Siddhanta today, if you will, Siddhanta, like, perfect conclusion at this point is that love for Krishna is more than love for everyone else. As simple as it may sound, we have to get it right. No. Love for Krishna is more than love for everything else, everyone else, including oneself. We don't have the capacity to love ourselves as we have the capacity to love Krishna. We are not the perfect object of love, although we try. And this is exactly this point, crucial point. Krishna is the perfect object of love about everything, which implies prem is about mukti. Remember, mukti is more about love for myself, and I want to be freed, and I want to be myself, isolated in transcendence. Krishna is about that. Prem is about that. And this is what exactly what was experienced by the ladies in Vrindavan. The ladies and the cows, remember, who had Krishna as their calf, who had Krishna as their children, the child, during this Brahma Bimohan Lila period. Interestingly, as we know, the mothers nor the cows knew that Krishna had become their child, but still their love increased. Their love for Krishna increased without knowing it was Krishna. That's an interesting thing, because that's the nature of the love. It's like, as the Bhagavatam say, ahaituki apratihata, which means causeless and unobstructed. I mean, it cannot be stopped by any means, anything. Whatever it may happen, it's only growing exponentially. Whatever you put in between, whether Krishna is there, whether Krishna is not there, whether Krishna is there in another form, still, they are made of love of Krishna, basically. No? So, the love is causeless, the love is unobstructed. In other words, this implies the Brajavasis do not need to love Krishna. Of course, this is obvious maybe for you, but just in case. They do not have to be aware that Krishna is God to love Him. Because some other people, they will love Krishna if He is God, if you will. That's Gyan Sunya Bhakti. Actually, they love Krishna because He's not God. But on top of that, and this is the unique example of this section of the Bhagavatam, on top of that, the Brajavasis, and in this case, these mothers and cows, they do not have to be aware of Krishna as Krishna to love Him more. You follow? I mean, they have Krishna there as their child. They don't need to know, no, actually it's Krishna, it's not your child. So now you can love Him as Krishna. No, they don't need that. Krishna can appear any form, as a child, as a calf, and their love for Krishna increases, even if they are not aware, oh, actually this is Krishna. So that shows the degree of how their love operates and functions. So again, we have gone a long way from thinking I am my body to how even if Krishna takes another body, the Brajavasis keep loving Him more and more in whatever form He appears, whether they are aware of He is Krishna or not. So that means they really love Krishna. They don't care for anything else. They don't care if Krishna wants to appear as a calf, as another boy, as a chair, as an harmonium. The nature of their love is just keeps growing exponentially. That's a serious subject matter. So anyhow, that's the high point that, again, as we mentioned, that Sukadeva Goswami reaches through this verse in his reply to Parikshit Maharaj, and a very high point of the whole 14th chapter. So still we have a few verses to finish the chapter, and we'll see that tomorrow in our last class. We'll study that there are 6 remaining verses, which somehow will be an elaboration of this high point that Sukadeva Goswami has reached. So we'll conclude with that tomorrow, as well as sharing some words about Brahma's final attainment through Gaur Lila, Haridas Thakur, and so on. So we'll conclude here, unless there is any questions or doubts or comments, something you may like to share. Bhakti Rasa?
There seems to be a lot of kids that grew up in the ISKCON, different situations where their parents are thinking along these lines, that Krishna is the source of all our love, and give everything to Krishna, and so now there's like a lot of dysfunctional second generation children who kind of were the afterthought of their parents' devotion and dedication to their service to Krishna. So maybe if you could help me understand that.
Should we blame Sukadeva Goswami for all the guru call dysfunctionality? That's it. Yeah, of course. Yeah, no? I think we don't need that anymore yet. So, of course, the dysfunctionality of whatever... Oops. Okay. Whatever distorted expression of these principles happen and take the form of some dysfunctionality is due both mostly to a misunderstanding of these teachings. No, it's not that actually we are promoting, I don't know, be neglectful as a father or be emotionally dysfunctional and not responsible, and because Krishna is the love of our lives, not my children, not my this. Yes, technically speaking, it's like that, but the point is how much you yourself understand what you are saying, no? And if the fruit of that narrative is dysfunctionality in every direction, including that of the parents, that speaks for itself, that you are not walking the talk properly, because again, and that has happened a lot, not only with that, but with so many things, like you just like, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. And maybe the person needs a psychiatrist. No, just chant and be happy. Yes, but what's the implications of chant and be happy? What's the implications if we are not this body? What's the implications of Krishna's the ultimate object of... That's why Sukadeva Goswami here, on some level, tries to unfold a little bit all the things. He didn't just say one thing and it's over, end of the picture. He tries to go from one level to another, from one level to another. And so... In the same way, we have to, as we go from one level to another, to properly appreciate what the Vrajavasis love is actually. If we actually are appreciating that properly, it will reflect back on how we are dealing with our, in this case, children, according to that principle. So according to that principle, doesn't mean that I will neglect them, except because I will be loving them through Krishna. So that should be the best possible type of love you can ever imagine. No, it shouldn't be like a totally dysfunctional, neglectful parenthood in the name of Krishna. No, you are giving Krishna a bad name by doing that, a bad rap, they say. So if it's properly in place, I mean, you will be worshipping your children in one sense, your wife, your house, everything is like, again, connected to Bhagavan. And by properly going first to the center, you will be honoring every person not as an object, as in terms of mind, but in terms of their connection with the soul, our universal source. So that will be really respectful and careful and sensitive. And so nothing of that is happening in the name of what Sukadeva Goswami say here. Then you may need to hear the whole Brahma Stuti again, no? Because that shouldn't be reflected in that way. That's totally counterintuitive to the actual intention and expression of those things. So yeah, I appreciate your point, because as glorious as these concepts may sound, we need to, okay, what do I do with this in the practice? Now, because when I'm telling, in the beginning we were saying, well, in this world everyone loves each other, but actually they love themselves through each other. Yeah. Of course, I may not say that as such crude way to someone who comes for the first time, but that's a fact. Now, if we are a devotee, that shouldn't be happening. That's the point. You shouldn't be loving yourself through your kids, but you should love your kids through Krishna, mm-hmm. No? No, that you shouldn't love yourself through kids doesn't mean you shouldn't love them.
No. Did you say you love
sorry?
Krishna in your kid?
Sorry again?
Can you say you should be loving Krishna in your child?
Yeah, there's a way. Of course, not to the point of making Krishna your child Krishna,
right.
But there's a play for that. Yeah, of course. And as Guru Maharaj said many times, even if you're a parent, you can take advantage of that experience you are going through as a parent, and when you're seeing your baby, that can be a acta sanudipana, or a reminder like, oh, how charming this is, and you make the comparison, oh, what must it be when Krishna performed his Kumar Lila? Not to downplay your own experience as a father, but just like to not lose sight of the bigger picture and the connection of that, no? So... That should be the ideal, healthy way of integrating all these concepts. Of course, it's easier said than done, and I have not been a father, mother in this lifetime, so it may sound like, oh, you can say all those things, you're Maharaj, but you have to go, yeah, I understand it, but I mean, you have, nonetheless, that's the principle, that's the teaching, so it's not that we can twist that to change that, but also we shouldn't distort that and end up in a totally dysfunctional situation that it's not what is intended by these sections of the Bhagavatam, by any section of the Bhagavatam, and of course this is not the only cases in which we have seen dysfunctionality being justified by whatever. What Prabhupada say, what the Bhagavatam say, what the Gita, I mean, everything can be turned into a source of dysfunctionality. Every verse, syllable, word of Shastra can be. Again, Shastra is Kalpataru, it's a desire tree. So you can approach it with whatever you desire, an idea, and it will reply back. But it doesn't mean that's the ultimate meaning of it. That's why we need guru and we need proper guidance and we need elders in our community to really shed light on the actual teaching, on the actual meaning of, on the actual intentions of Shastra. Because if not, I mean, hearing Shastra, hearing Krishna's passing, that just doesn't mean just only hearing the story. No, before, when the over and over again Shastra saying the benefits of hearing Harikatha and contacting Krishna's pastimes and all, it's not just, okay, Mahaprabhu went to Jagannath, accepted sannyas, went to Jagannath Puri, he stayed in the Gambira, did Sankirtan during Rath Yatra, his associate visited him from Bengal and other places for 4 months during Chaturmasi, and then they returned, and this happened year after year like that, and then he passed away. So then you have heard the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. No, that's mean that. It's not so much about what he did, but why he did all those things. Now, to go to the background of the activity, to the intentions behind, to the attitude, to the feelings, to the inner, and all that, sometimes we need to hear from sadhus, because we may just read the verses and not be able to grasp those things. So my point is the same here. Now, you read these verses and like, okay, that means that I should behave like this with my family, with my kids, and and you start to be like a cyborg or something, no? No, you are not hearing properly, no? You are taking the book by yourself, and it's like, sometimes you shouldn't take the book yourself, that may be dangerous, no? Yeah, the other day I was thinking that, no? Sometimes the devotees will write, or will ask Maharaj, what should I read? And I was thinking, but first they should ask two more questions. First you should ask, should I read? And then after that, not only what to read, but how should I read? Generally we never ask, how should I read? How to approach Shastra? But which Shastra to read? But you are giving, taking for granted that you know how to approach Shastra and how to read. And that you should be reading. And maybe that's not the case. Maybe because you are only asking what to read, that shows that you shouldn't be reading, that you don't know how to read. And maybe you should ask those questions first, because if not, you just take the book and maybe end in inaugurating a whole movement of dysfunctionality, but supported by the Bhagavatam. So it's like, no, that's like the greatest embarrassing. No? Like the saintly people, like, just they feel like embarrassed, like how you can be doing, how that can be done in the name of such a high, noble, sensitive idea, this is being promoted, this is like, oh, scandal for a saintly person. And we are supposed to please the saintly person, not to make them. So yeah, we have lots to learn from history, and history tends to repeat itself, so we have to be careful not to do the copy-paste and engage in the same mistakes with only some updated language, but try to learn from the mistakes of the past and try to, yeah, to understand these principles in a sensitive way, sustainable way, wholesome way, human way. Because as I always like to say, all this is in the context of singing the glories of Braja Lila. Braja Lila is not a Lila, and not a Lila is the greatest Lila. Krishna Raya Tikka Kila Sarvo Tama Nara Lila Tara Bahu Chamhara Sarup Gopa Besh Vinu Karnava Kisho Natavar Nara Lila Haya Nuru. Nara Lila is the greatest Lila, the highest of all Lilas. Nara Lila is human like Lila. You won't never go enter human like Lila if you don't preserve your humanity. So this section is glorifying Nara Lila. So you can never conclude, okay, the conclusion of this praise of Nara Lila is that I become totally inhuman and treat others in an insensitive way because this section is promoting. No, this section is promoting Nara Lila, seeing the glory of Braja Lila, which is human-like Lila. Unless you become human-like, you won't enter Braja Lila. You will go somewhere else. I don't know where. But so, you again, Falina Farishate, you have to judge the tree by its fruit. So, if the fruit is being given is, yeah, indifference and neglectfulness in the name of transcendence, that's not the transcendence that corresponds with Nara Lila. Nara Lila is transcendence, it's transcendental, but it's a human transcendence. So if your own project of transcendence is making you more and more inhuman, that's not corresponding, aligned with the type of transcendence we find in Nara Lila. And this particular section is all in the context of Nara Lila, Braja Lila, Krishna Lila. So you have to bear in mind the context in which all this is expressed. Context is Krishna Lila, Braja Lila, human-like Lila, praising the glories of being a human and transcended at the same time. So the question is, how do I put all this stuff in practice so I retain my humanity, but I become transcendental as well? How to do it? Because that's what's being promoted here. If that's not happening, then I'm not fulfilling the purpose of this section. If you have a guru and you are a proper disciple, and the guru is a proper guru, all the things should be clear. And if it's not clear for you and start to do some nonsense, there should be someone to correct you in time. Of course, with this, I'm not blaming anyone and saying something happened in the past, that's the fault of this and that. Sometimes there can be some particular circumstances, but whatever the case, whatever we are now, we have to learn from that and move on forward with proper, better understanding. We can always improve our understanding of all the things. So, hope that helps. Another series of lectures over there. Healing generational trauma created by misreading of Krishna Lila. All these high ideas, absolute concepts, have great potential to invoke this functionality, because they are very high things, absolutes. So if you don't know how to deal with them with proper substance and realism, you can create lots of gaps between where we are and the absolute, and the absolute, and the highest, and the highest. So we should always be very capable of establishing the proper bridge and distance, and how to thread that in a sustainable way, and not just like, this is the goal and not where you are now. Okay, thank you, but I have like 3,000 kilometers from one place to another, so I kind of just like zip and be there. So the more the absolutes we use, that's why sometimes, so many times in this history of humanity, the worst things were done in the name of religion and of God, because you're using these high ideas to, without knowing, with bad intention or without it, but and create such a dysfunctional situation and abuse, and anyhow, so yeah, there's a lot to say about that. That's a whole separate series, but we should be careful about that. Especially as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, as we were speaking the other day after lunch, because we have such a refined system and such a detailed description of everything in transcendence, that lends itself even for more of that type of dysfunctionality, because we have the highest, more detailed, elite-like description of the absolute, and that can lend to many things, to complacency. I'm the highest group, nobody knows as much as we know, and you just like become like complacent, or again to demand and in like immediately reaching that higher level of penetration into transcendence, while you still have to deal with so many human issues or so many other things that there can be a big gap to bridge. So yeah, we are very blessed and very fortunate to have such a detailed and deep and unique theology, but if we don't deal with that with humility, with realism, with sensitivity, it can become our worst enemy as well. That's why Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is like what? Razor's edge?
Yes.
No? He implied that. It has the potential to give you the greatest, most charming prospect, or it can create your worst hell. Not because it is such, but if it's misread, misapplied, so let's be careful. Not to create neurosis, but just to be properly attentive, aware of all this. Yeah. Okay, something else? So, thank you so much for all your time and patience and attention. And we are tomorrow in our last meeting, concluding with our whole series. So, see you there at the same time. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Priman Hari Hari Bo.